Well, what I'd like to do today is cover some of the material from this book. This is the book that we use in our parenting class, but I also want to cover more than what's in this particular lesson. But the parenting class is a very important one. We want to, what we should have covered this last week or 2 weeks ago, we were scheduled to have it, but so many people were out, they were sick with the flu and so forth. And so I thought, well, I'll go ahead and give last week's presentation to the congregation, plus more information. This is called The Parenting from the Tree of Life. Basically talks about an attitude that we should have with parenting. And this sermon today, you may say, what has that got to do with parenting? But we'll take a look at it here. You can see a marriage is more than just a legal status. But it really is, as it says here, it's a reflection of the plan of God for humanity, as well as the holy days are. So marriage is a very important thing, and it's something that is very seldom understood. With my cataracts, I got my hip replaced, I got my double hernias repaired, but now they've got to fix my cataracts. So eventually I'll be like 90 years old and be ready to read. Anyway, what is the most important element in a successful child rearing? Okay, so, and you say it's a child rearing, but the answer is a happy marriage, a good marriage. That's the first important element in successful child rearing, is a mother and father that work together. In this book it reads, I took the quote, we believe we believe that the greatest influence you have on your children will not come from your role as mom and dad, but as a role as husband and wife. They will watch you. In other words, your children watch you. And we've had a little discussions with our kids from time to time as they grew up. They said, you know, no matter what happened, you know, sometimes we would have a trial in our marriage. And then Lisa found out if she was wrong, she couldn't help it. But anyway, no, it's just a bad sense of humor. I'm sorry. But, you know, if we go through a little rough patch, the children said, well, we always knew that mom and dad loved each other, and that gave them that solidity, that gave them that stability. Every marriage has its rough patches, so in case you don't recognize that, you will when you get married. But anyway, a key role is that mom and dad love each other, and in that love, they create an environment for the children, an environment of safety for the children. So I'm going to have to turn around because I can't read that little screen. What does marriage have to do with child rearing? Well, about everything. Genesis 2:27. Let's go there. Genesis 2 and verse 27. And I'll be reading from the New Living Translation as well as from the King James and one or two others here. But roughly, let me read to you Genesis 2 verse 27. Genesis 2 and verse 27. Yep. That's not right. Anyway, a family is a dynamic interplay between human beings. There's a dynamic place there. I don't know why. Is it 127? Anyway, he made them male and female, and he made them to have children, is what I'm trying to point out here. I don't know where I misplaced that. Is it 127? So God created, okay, a little mistake. Now, my wife should have caught that, but I know. We went over it, and I didn't catch it. So God created people in his own image, it says in the New Living Version. God patterned himself after him. So God patterned them after him, or in his image. Male and female, he created them. So you see here, this older gentleman with his grandson, they're doing the exercises, and it's part of that environment that you're used with when you're with children. Overall, we're going to talk about the child-parent interplay and how does that take place. Personality reflects the genetic disposal of a child. Every child has a different personality. Now, if you have more than one child, you know that. Every one of our children have a distinctive personality that's their own. Okay, so some of them are very outgoing, some are shy. Some are very more, domineering in their approach to life and so forth. So we'll talk about that in a minute. There's a temperament. There's a temperament that's involved. And this is all this dynamic that's in a family. There's much more, but we can't cover everything, of course. And then there's an environment that's created by mom and dad. So let's move on here, and I'll show you. See the old man on the bottom? How old were you supposed to be in that picture? Okay, that's actually Brian. He has a thing in his computer, in his hand, in his phone, some kind of app that you take your picture and it ages you. So this is him at 70. So that, you want to know what he looks like at 70? There it is. I don't know if it's an improvement or not, but there it is. So we have a parent-child interplay. Personality reflects much of that genetic disposition of the child. We're talking about every child is very, very different. Some are, again, very shy. Some are gregarious, open, this kind of thing. They're really happy individuals. Not that the others aren't happy, but they express themselves very differently. Okay, any of you that have more than one child, do they have exactly the same personality? Raise your hand if your children have exactly the same personality. Ah. Yeah, you only have one kid, so that's not fair. Chevy. I won't mention his name, though. Okay. So, and this can also speak to their physical and their intellectual potential as well. Again, genetic disposition. Some people are more athletically disposed. I'm not. My wife is. She had a scholarship to go to Ambassador playing basketball. They'd pay me not to play basketball. I don't have it. Curtis is an athletic person and so forth. Brian wasn't as athletic, but he has talents in music and many other areas. So he has a lot of talents that he didn't get from me, I know, like how to repair things and this type of thing, but he's very, very adaptive and he learns fast. And then my daughter, she has her own personality. She's a teacher. She can handle people who are a lot bigger than her without fear. Now, my wife couldn't do that. She takes care of the little ones. She's comfortable with that. But when my daughter was in college, she was teaching in a high school somewhere down around here in the Metroplex. And this big old football player kind of put his arm around the back of her chair. And she said basically, she didn't say this, but the implication was, if you value your life, remove your arm. I can't remember exactly how she said it. Something or other, move that arm back. And we made it very clear. And then on, he wasn't trying to be mean or obnoxious. He was just testing, and she didn't put up with it. And even her job that she's doing now is kind of working with kids who are having trouble, and she kind of works with them and the teachers. Anyway, so I won't get into all that. So they each have very different personalities, and that's good. That's good. The world goes around with that. So, and kids aren't going to be the same. Whoa, now. What about a child's temperament? That part of the personality, he or she is outgoing. I made a typo there, as you see. Shy, is they shy? Are they funny? Or do they have an even temper? Or are they easily? Do they easily blow up? So a parent has a responsibility to guide those children. All kids have a strong desire and want to express themselves. Some kids are very, very strong in their personality, and that personality has to be directed as they're growing up. Otherwise, they run roughshod over everybody. I know our second son was that way. He'd just walk in and say, I'm going to go do this now. And say, whoa, 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 whoa. Come back and ask that. Ask if you can do it. Oh, can I go do this now? Yes, but if you come back at such and such a time. Otherwise, he just, I'm by, I'm gone. Was he kind of trying to be mean and rebellious? No, it's his personality. And he would be strong-willed. I remember from the sermonette, there you go, there you are. That same boy, now Brian's got his own problems, and we'll get into that much later. But anyway, when he was a kid, Curtis would do the same thing. You give him instructions, you could see it turning in his little head. Okay, I'm not supposed to do that, but do I want to do it? And he has a high pain tolerance. So if you swatted him, he even said, when mom swatted him, it never hurt, but he just let on. And a swat, it wasn't beating the kid. It was two or three swats on the bottom, and mom would walk away going, ooh, that hurt. And he would just stand there. But he learned the lesson, you can't do that. He learned that lesson, you can't do that. Well, as he grew older, thank God, he learned to direct that personality in a way that was very strong in his beliefs and his commitments. very strong in his beliefs and his commitments. You have to direct that kind of strong personality, as you do all children. And, you know, Brian had to learn music wasn't a career he could do. You know, he loved to do it, but you can't do it and keep the Sabbath. You can't do it and keep the Sabbath day. So each child in their own way had to come to see, boy, I'd really like to pursue that, but I have to take God and make God first. It kind of pains me to say nice things about Brian when he's here. Anyway, there's a temperament in each child. There's a temperament in each child. And there's a temperament in each parent. Okay, mom and dad, are you exactly alike in your personalities? Anybody exactly alike? If you are, raise your hand. No. Most of the time we're attracted to somebody who's not like us. Now that can work out good or work out bad. Sometimes if you get two people who are exactly alike, oh boy, wham, you have these confrontations. Okay? But you have different personalities. So I've seen often persons, very outgoing personality, is kind of drawn to a quiet personality. It kind of balances them out. That doesn't always work that way. But you look for that. You look for that. Now, sometimes very shy people will kind of bump into another very shy people, and you have two very shy people with a very, very shy family, or, you know, quiet family. Nothing wrong with that, but it's these kind of things are important. So the kind of parent we are, that actually is something to do with our parenting and how it impacts our parenting. And again, the way you were parented is the way you were parent most likely, almost always. You take the pattern that you're familiar with. What else can you do? And for the good or for the bad, you take that pattern. Just an example, how many people have just, you know, if I can use it in quotes, swore they would never marry an alcoholic because they came from an alcoholic family. Guess what? Oftentimes they would marry an alcoholic. Even though they didn't want to, though, before they met the person, then, well, I'll help them, especially if it's the wife, she wants to help him get over his drinking problem. Why would they be attracted to that? It's what they know. It's what they're familiar with. Okay, that's a bit of a generalization, but I've seen it many a time. Maybe you have too. I don't know. So anyway, we have our personalities, and we bring that with us. Okay, so what does marriage have to do with child rearing? Because we're seeing about everything. That dynamic will continue. The environment created is an environment created by mom and dad. That, again, speaks to the influence of the home environment. Is what mom and dad create. This is what mom and dad create as the family. Do they feel loved? Do they feel accepted? Yes, they get corrected if they do something wrong. But they know they're going to be corrected in love. They know they're not going to be beaten out of anger. That's not going to happen. But mom and dad help provide an environment where they're just showered with love, but also discipline. Discipline doesn't mean spanking. Discipline means teaching from a biblical perspective. Teaching them. So again, really, any kind of a spanking, you don't have to do a lot of that. And if you do, you certainly don't beat a child. A couple swats, and usually when they're very, very young kids, is all they need. And then they learn. See, they learn. If you're having to spank a child repeatedly, there's something wrong here. You need to step back and say, wait a minute, I need to figure out what I'm doing wrong. Because that's not a normal thing. Because of an environment of safety, love, that's sort of like a warm cocoon those children grow in. My wife grew up in a family that they were raised in the church, and she had a lot of benefits that I didn't have. She comes from a very connected family and so forth, and that impacts her child rearing and her marriage relationship. I came from a very disconnected family. Hardly know each other, to be honest. And so living with her has helped kind of round me out, kind of. I was skinny when we got married. It's her fault. She force feeds me, I want you to know. Anyway, but having that experience from her helped me. Helped me too, because I came from a very disconnected family. That, in fact, impacted my child rearing. That impacted my whole entire life, and it does hers, the way she was raised. So we bring all this dynamic into a marriage, and you're, whoa, it takes time to figure out, what is the strength of my mate? How can we work that strength out? What are the weaknesses of my mate or myself? Look at yourself first. And what can I do to make that better? Look to your mate, because you should have a marriage where you could trust them. What can I do better, baby? What can I do better, sweetheart? Well, sit down, get comfortable, because it's going to be a long time. No, so, but the point is where you can sit down and talk to them. And you know, if your mate, you know, is easily hurt, kind of be gentle with it. Maybe just mention one, two things, not the 300 that he needs to hear. Just one or two things. Be gentle with them, or her. Be gentle with her. You know, you can say, you know, I'm certainly not a perfect parent, and you admit you're not either. So let's work this thing together. That's critical for child rearing. Work together. Children have radar. They know if you're not working together. And what will they do? They're going to radar in. What do they focus in on? The one that they know will help them to get what they want. They're not evil. That's children. And you want to train them in an atmosphere of love and respect. It's the same thing we're aiming for in the church. Years and years ago, the ministry was far too strict, and it hurt people. But now we're growing past that and getting out of that, because we want to have a church be an environment where you can grow and, if need be corrected in a spirit of love, in an atmosphere of love and respect, if that needs to be done. And hopefully the adult will see that. So these things are same thing in our family, which is the family of the church. Again, to protect your family, the more parents demonstrate love for one another, the more they saturate your children's senses with a confidence of love, safe, and a secure world. Now, any of you who've grown up in a divorced family, whenever that divorce happens, it shatters children. And my parents were divorced, and I remember that shattering. And it's very difficult to begin to trust again into what's going on. Even when you're a young adult, and you could be at college and your children get divorced, it's rough. Because that was your example. That was your model that you're patterning yourself after. And you knew, hey, well, certainly wasn't a perfect model, but it still is shattering. It's shattering to adults, and we shouldn't think that, you know, they're old enough, let's just get a divorce, they'll get over it. It does impact everybody in that environment and the children. So we want to be very careful that we don't get into that. I don't know if I should share that story or not. Well, I will just show you. I was in high school. I went off to a seminary to study to be a priest. I didn't make it, but I went off to seminary to be a priest, and my parents had gotten divorced the year before, and I'm off there, and I didn't think it had any impact on me at all, okay? And somehow we had an English class, and somehow something came up, and it triggered. I was as surprised as anybody. Somebody said, well, what do you guys think about something or other? All I know is my reaction was, and the teacher called on me. What happened? The teacher called on me, and I just blurted out with the expletive deleted, there's too much blankety-blank talk in this world, and I'm not going to do it. And I stormed out of the room. I was as shocked as anybody else. I was angry, and I didn't know it until that minute. I was angry about the divorce. And if you would have asked me beforehand, I thought, well, whatever, they want to do this with me. I didn't realize that, and that was quite a story. Okay, let's move on. These things affect us, and it affects us all of our lives to one degree or another. So that's why it's important, and Lisa and I wanted to go over that when we were dating each other, to make sure, you know, you're marrying somebody very imperfect. She knew that, but she's, I think, the ideal wife. So, and a solid Christian. The family disappeared. Is that me or you? Okay. Okay, I'll try to read it. Well, anyway, the family is the first culture that the child encounters. So it's the first culture. You are the one that develops that culture, and they learn to respond and live within that culture. Okay. Well, it's getting interesting because it's disappearing as we go. There's a two challenge. I'll have to go to the book here. There's two basic challenges to a relationship here, and I'll just read it. The fairy tale idea that, you know, you get married and it's happily ever after, I think everybody knows that's not true. Now, if you haven't been married yet, you might not totally believe that, but after you've been married a week, you might realize that. Now, why do I say that? I'm kind of being a little flippant, but a young lady back, not here, years ago, she wanted to get married outside the church. Okay, she wanted to get married outside the church. So she called me and she says, you know, this guy, he loves me and I love him, which I didn't doubt. And he said I can go to church every Sabbath. He said I can keep the holy days. In fact, pay for my way to go to the feast. And he promised me that. And I said, well, that's good, but let me show you the other side of that coin, the other side of that record. You flip the record and it says, why do you have to go every Sabbath? Did I marry that church? Do you realize how much it costs to send you to the feast every year? She got married. A week later, she called and says, I made the biggest mistake of my life. She can't have that kind of environment. She can't have that kind of environment. She said, let me, whenever any other woman, a young woman wants to get married outside the church, have them call me so I can talk to them. And I says, it won't do any good. Because where you were a week ago, we think we're sort of the exception to that rule. That's human nature. That's human nature. Now, you know, if she had, on her, talking to her friends in that way, that would be her choice. But really, we have to realize, so if you're young, you haven't yet been married, remember, if you want this kind of environment, there has to be that unity of thought, that unity of belief. And marriage has its own challenges anyway, without adding in the church into the frame. So I don't know what happened to half of that, but anyway, we'll march on here. The more love is demonstrated toward each other, the more it trickles down to the children. That's really what was in this frame here. This means that the husband and wife union is not just a good first step towards success in childbearing, but is a necessary one. That's why I decided to really cover this material, which we would have covered in the class, but since I had an opportunity to speak here, and we didn't have the opportunity to have the class last time, we're going to carry both, tie in both here. So those of you in the class are going to go to chapter 3 next time. But it was a necessary one of which our children will come to depend. One man and one woman agreement may seem prejudiced or biased in these days where family styles are supported by diversity, but indeed it is. So again, to family, if you want to see the destruction of the family, that's why you see it in our culture, because it is so important to God. So when you see our culture attacking something, ask yourself, whoa, wait a minute, all these wonderful changes, are they really changes that are for the good, or is it something that's against what God teaches? And you'll see in our culture, things that God has taught, even in our culture that has been a part of the culture for thousands of years, are now being ripped apart. And a culture like ours is more and more confused every day and has no idea what end is up. But in the church, we're getting that teaching so we can remember, and we won't go with it. All right, marriage is a type of the spiritual relationship between God and the church. Let's go to Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5. We'll turn there. And I'm going to start here in verse, 32. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning, he says here, I speak concerning Christ and the church. I kind of brought that up. A marriage relationship, if properly run, if properly lived by, better put, is a relationship that God has with the church. That's why I said for the church, there's time when we need to be lovingly corrected and guided. Hopefully the best place is through a sermon where it's not a personal, you know, thing. But if it needs to be a one-on-one and have the spirit of, I want to learn, I want to make the changes, and I didn't see this about myself, I'm blinded to that. I didn't see it. Nevertheless, let every one of you, this is in the King James, in particular, so love his wife even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence or respect her husband. That environment, that produces that cocoon for those precious little ones. It's very, very important for them, that cocoon for them. Because they're learning for the first time, how do I deal with life? When it gets stressful, do I go into a fit? Or do I learn, because mom and dad said, no, let's not go into a fit. Here's what we do, and so forth. They have to be taught these things. They're not evil. They have to be taught. Okay? Let's see. How much time I have? Okay. The more love is demonstrated towards each other in the marriage relationship, the more it trickles down into the children. Just can't emphasize that enough. It's not constantly spanking to teach these children what they need to know, and I'll just beat it out of them. No, you're not. You're going to terrify them. I've known some people, and I respect them. They know they should never have children. So if they got married, talked with his wife, he says, we can't have children. But the way he was raised, he says, I'll ruin them. Because it's his pattern, and he's got enough maturity to know that. Some people should not be parents because they've been damaged too much being raised. It takes a lot of guts. It takes a lot of faith to see that. Otherwise, you pass that on to the next generation. It takes a family, not a village. Now, by that, Mrs. Clinton, during the campaign, said it takes a village. Okay, and actually, what they're meaning is it takes the government leading, the passing laws, all the way down to federal, the state, and local, all the way down to school boards, which will raise your children and tell you what you need to know, what you don't need to know. That was kind of the attitude that came into. The idea of it takes a village actually is an ancient teaching that comes from Africa, where people who, they live in a village environment. They're very tribal, at least hundreds of years ago and before. And in that village, you'd have mom and dad, grandma and grandpa. You'd have great-grandma and grandpa. You have who knows how many uncles and nieces and cousins. They're all in a family. So they really are, in the village, a lot of them are just family. And so they would pitch in to help. Very different than what the modern application of that is today, where it takes the state to raise your children. And the state really belongs to the children, and we'll give you a tax rebate if you behave yourself and raise your children the way we tell you to. That's really what it amounts to. Children can have a sex change operations and not tell you about it. Sad. That's what it takes, a family, an extended family. Today, Brian came over. I don't think he mind. He had the baby in his arms, and she didn't want to wear the dress she was wearing. Now, mom, as most moms are on Sabbath morning, I don't know, she doesn't have anything to do. She has to fix breakfast, take care of herself, get ready for church, take care of two other girls at the same time. And then after that's all done, you have a nervous breakdown. That's with me. I can feel too many things going on. So he just brought the baby over and said, she doesn't want to wear the dress. And we watched the consummate professional, the wife there. Not me. I said, what I do is again her to the wife. And she just redirected the little one. Within 2 minutes, she was happy with the dress. She said, what do you have on your dress? It's not like, shut up, you're going to wear what you're wearing. I submit to my authority, because they don't do that. But it's not that. So Lisa said, I really like the flowers on your dress. What kind of flower is that? Oh, okay. And then she took her somewhere, and then they talked for a few minutes. And 2 minutes later, she came out. She says, bye, Grandma. And I said, you like your dress? I asked. So it's a matter of redirection. That's why I told them, watch a consummate professional at work. She's worked with all these little kids over the years as a teacher. So anyway, it takes grandma and grandpa and the wisdom they can bring to it, and great-great-grandpa can bring into it. The modern family is so split up. Satan knows exactly what he's doing, doesn't he? That's why it's so wonderful to be able to be around your grandchildren. All right. There's the creation of man, the creation of woman, and the family experience. So we talk about the biblical view of family. Genesis 1:26 through 27, God made him in his own image. That's what I was trying to read to you before. Both man and woman were made in the image of God, or created in the image of God. That tells us that man and woman don't have a superior relationship. Man doesn't have a superior relationship to a woman. She's created in the image of the same God. That's why we look at people, what color are you? That doesn't matter. What background you come from, it doesn't matter. You're made in the image of God. We see each other in that light. It sure solve a lot of problems in the world. We're made in the image of God because he has a work that he's doing. Now, in the Greek, it says here, Genesis 2:27, the helper, the term helper, really is referring to a counterpart, as it says in the Greek. I'm sorry, the Hebrew. It can also mean a sustainer behind him. So she's a sustainer, a helper, come along beside him. A complementary helper. It's not a man, wife, ugh, do what I say, cook my soup. And if you don't, then you have the hammer and you, or not the hammer, the, what are they, caveman head, the club. None of that. But Satan, as you see, how Satan takes a, something that we see in the Bible, the sermon, and just twists it all around. No, it's not that. Children, let me treat you better on this side. Children do not complete the family. That may be a surprise to you, but the way I'm we're trying to focus this is a woman alone can't can help create a complete a man and a man to complete a woman. But children are the fruit of the fruit of the complete union between man and woman. What am I trying to say? Should bring out the best of each mate. So when I say complete, it really means you bring out the best in each mate. And man should help bring out the best in a woman. And a woman should bring out the best in a man. They're equal, but they have different responsibilities based upon sexual activity, and you know who they are mentally and emotionally. Men and women are different. Anybody question that one? We are not the same. On a cellular level, we're different. On a hormonal level, we're different. But we're equal. The two shall become one. So slowly over the years, I've come to learn that you say, viva la difference, instead of, why is she different than me? Shut up. That's why God made her. Learn from it. I can help. I talk to myself like that. So I shouldn't talk to you like that. But anyway, settle down. So we help to complete each other. That's really what I mean here when it says complete. We really are not spiritually complete without the Holy Spirit in that relationship. So I just want to make sure we clear that. Okay. What makes relationships difficult? So let's go to James 4, verse 1 through 2. James 4, 1 through 2. What causes the quarrels and fights among you? Do they not come from the evil desires that are within you? What? I don't have any evil desires. Who says I have evil desires? I'll knock them in the head. The person says I have evil desires. I'm exaggerating for effect. There's something about us, and we say, I want my way. And if I don't get it, I'm going to raise a war over this thing. That's on a family level. That could be projected to national levels. We want something, and we're going to get it. Okay? Now, that's from the New Living Translation. This is from the Remedy Translation. It's not many people aware of it. Why is there so much hostility, fighting, and arguments among you? Because of the survival of the fittest instinct controls you. That's a paraphrase. You know, some people just dominate a relationship. And if you're in that kind of relationship, you just sort of back off. Don't get involved. Don't kind of come up against him or her. Because if you do, woe is you. So they're in a difficult spot. They're in a difficult spot. Now let's take a look at a couple other verses while we have the time. We'll go now to Proverbs 26, verse 21. Proverbs 26 and verse 21. A charcoal of embers is as wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome man or woman for kindling fire. Think about that. So some people just stir up problems. And they love doing it. Some of you are laughing because you know somebody who's like that. Oh, Uncle So-and-so comes, you can just bet we're going to have a big confrontation or something because he or she is going to make sure they get their point out. Some people just cannot live in peace. Okay, what happened to that person? They probably didn't grow up in an environment of love and warmth. They learned that they had to be assertive and attack, if you will, and get their point out and try to belittle others around them to make sure that that's how you live life. And he comes out or she comes out on the top. Yeah, you like to marry that kind. Ooh, good luck. All right, let's take a look at a couple other verses real quickly here. Proverbs 31, 10 through 13. And if you have a Proverbs 31 wife, you're really blessed. An excellent wife. Proverbs 31, 13, this is from the New American Standard Bible. An excellent wife. Who can find? They're, you know, hard to find, in other words. For her worth is far above jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and they will have no lack of gain. You see, we're a family environment here. The children feel a sense of protection, a warmth, a cocoon of love and acceptance. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She looks for wool and flax. These are ways of doing things, business, if you will, and works with her hands in delight. She had maybe, as we would say today, she might have her own little business or whatever. But she's thorough. She's complete. Who can find that kind of character? Doesn't mean you have to have a business if you're a woman. But if you do, that's the kind of person that is there. It forms an excellent wife. Proverbs 19, verse 11 through 13, again from the New American Standard Bible. A man's discretion makes him slow to anger. And as you grow older, that it becomes more of a truth. When you're young, you can be a little hot-headed. Not that I ever was, of course. No, we all were. And it is his glory to overlook transgression. You ever been with somebody, boy, you step on their toes, boom, it's coming right back at you. May not be in a fight if they're in the church, maybe sometimes. You may not be a fist to cuffs kind of thing, but woe unto you because you've questioned him. A foolish son is destruction to his father, and the contentions of a wife are like a constant dripping. Proverbs 16. Verse 18 through 19. Again, this is from the New American Standard Bible. Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before stumbling. It is better to be humble in spirit with the lowly than to be divided and to divide the spoil with the proud. First Corinthians 8, verse 1 and 3. This is from the New Revised Standard Version. Now concerning the food sacrificed to idols, we know that all of us possess knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. We have tremendous knowledge that God has given us. We should be humbled by what God has given us, the knowledge that he's given us, the holy days, the plan, the truth about what God's Holy Spirit is, the truth about what his family, and all of these things that he shared with us should humble us. Anyone who claims to know something does not yet have the necessary knowledge. In other words, whatever we know, it's given to us of God, not of our own doing. But anyone who loves God is known by him. A humble spirit, and again, with child-rearing, to be a humble parent. As children get older and they need to be corrected, you can sit them down and say, you know, we need to talk about whatever it may be. And I know you love us as mom and dad, and I know you're wanting to live God's way. You go to church with us, and you ask questions, and that's wonderful, and that's great. But here in this area, you need some help. As a parent, I'd like to try and help you, and help you, because you might even say, I made that mistake as a young person, or I've known others who have. Not a long lecture, but just say, what you're doing is not right. I love you, and because I love you, I don't want you to make the mistake that I made or that others have made. And I ask you to prayerfully consider what you're doing and the direction you're going. It has to be what their age is. But make it age appropriate where you're not. That's a discipline. That's a type of discipline. See, for an older person. Well, I love you and I respect you, but you're making a mistake in this area. That's why I say when the children are growing up, and it even brings out of this book, you shouldn't be their friend, you should be their parent. That as they grow older, that dynamic begins to change. So eventually, when they're grown full age, now they can become your friends because you're more of a standard of equality in that way. Now, why is it you don't want to be, and again, when you say not to be friends with your children, I mean not to be friendly. It doesn't mean not to be kind. It means that you know that as a parent, you may have to make a decision for your child that they won't like and they won't be happy with you, but that's not the key thing here. The key thing is you're making that decision for the good of the child, even though they may not like it at the time. Many times if you're in that friend relationship with a 3 or 4-year-old, you won't correct them when they need it. You just sort of let it go by. But they need that correction. And again, in love, in mercy, in compassion. And as they get older, that dynamic will begin to change, where you can start having discussions with your children as they get older. And then there comes a time when you become your children's friends. And that's a wonderful spot to be in. That's a wonderful spot to be in. Believe me, I've seen it where people have been, the children, when they're friends, they, little ones are on a first name basis with their parents. Hey, Susan or Joel. No. They don't learn to respect. Again, just a little something special here to bring up. If a child is trying not to have respect for their parents, what kind of employee will that person make? You walk in, here's the corporate president, you say, hey, Joe, how you doing? I don't think so. I thought I'd say, hi, Mr. So-and-so, how you doing? You know, there's all of these different things. They're there to teach children. 1 Corinthians 13. And again, we'll read to you from the New Living Translation. That's, of course, the love chapter, and so important with children. 1 Corinthians 13:4. Love is patient and is kind. Let's talk about here about parenting, but also marriage. Love is not jealous, nor boastful, or proud, or rude. Love does not demand its own way. Love is not irritable, and it keeps no accord or no record of evil or what's wrong. I may have mentioned this before, but an old couple that I counseled back in the early 80s, they're both passed away now, they were in their 80s, and they hated each other. And they've been married for 50-plus years. So here's this old couple that should be enjoying their last years together, just reminiscing, you know, children and grandchildren, that they hate each other. They sound like, you know, almost like newlyweds, in one sense, who've been fighting. Says, where did all this hostility come from? And he said, she said something to me that hurt me. And I said, well, how long ago? 42 years ago or whatever it was. And it's just been festering and festering and festering and festering. And I said, look where it's gotten you. You need to go back. And we talked about these verses and the like. You know, what's more important? What's more important, to be right or to say, you know what, that's not important. What's more important is the preservation of a relationship. That's most important. Now, if it's something to do with doctrine, you want to make sure you're right, but at least you can present your presentation, and they can accept it or reject it. But there just comes times in relationships where you go to argue till you, everybody around you submits to you and admits you're right. Good luck in that kind of marriage. Because you just learn to shut up, clam up, and say, yes, dear. Because you know you can't have peace without it. And it's a fake peace. So anyway, love, again, it says that love is patient and so forth. 1 John 3. I wish we could take all of you with us on our visits over the years, you know, with us, and you'd see another side of the ministry, which it would be good. But it can also be kind of sobering, where you're dealing with people's personal issues, the pain, the agony that some of people go through. And when I first went out as a trainee, my first day, I think I told you this, by the end of the first month or two, in my prayers, I went to God and said, I don't think this is for me. I didn't ask for this. They asked me if I'd go out as a trainee. My head is about to blow up with pain. I had headaches and stress, and I wasn't doing anything. I was just listening. Because the pastor said, don't say anything. The fact is, you don't know anything yet. But don't say anything. Just listen. And when we get in the car, you can ask all you want. And boy, I tell him, boy, we got in the car. He says, not only did I not know the answer to that question, I never considered it. So after a few years, though, or actually a few months goes by, you begin to see people are making changes. And it's a positive thing. And it's an encouraging thing. But boy, at first, wow. You never realize it. Brethren, just like everybody else, has all the problems that's in the world, that's in the church. And the ministry touches that and wants to reach out and help them. You're touching out to the ministry for that help. But it helps you to see the humanity of the church, but also to see the spiritual growth. That's what's really encouraging to see. And I happened to ask other trainees that went out the same year I did. We had a refresher program at the same time. And they said they had the same impression. I don't know about this. It was something you didn't think about. But why? We're all human. But that's just something we don't think about. 1 John 3:17, the New Revised Standard Version. How does God's love abide in anyone who has the world's goods and see a brother or sister in need and refuses to help? Little children, this is an old man, the Apostle John, in his 90s, let us love not in word and speech, but in truth and action. How much more for our children and for our mates? How much more for our children and our mates? So, let's move on now. As we conclude, marriage is a covenant made before God. That's what it says in our marriage ceremony. Do you covenant in relationship with God to take this woman, this man? It's an agreement that you're making before God and with God about the person you're about to marry. It's very, very important. That's why we try to help people to understand that with marriage and baptism and so forth. Do they really realize the commitment by making and what they're doing? And because it is a commitment made before God, by intertwining God into the commitment, blessings occur. And that is very true when it comes to marriage and childbearing and all that that encompasses. 1 Corinthians 13. Come on. 1 Corinthians 13, I'll read from the New Living Translation, verse 5. We read it a little bit already. Love is patient, it's kind, it's not jealous, boastful, or proud, nor rude. Love does not demand its own way. Love is not irritable, but keeps no record of evil, and so forth. And then at the end there, where it says marriage, this is, I don't know who said it, but it was in a book that I was reading. Marriage is a long love letter written over time to each other and to God. It's a long love letter we're writing, showing our love for each other and demonstrating it before God. What an environment to raise children in.